Was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done. The moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go?
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, the station making waves. And what follows next is our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, digging deeper into local news and alternative views around Dearborn. Yep, Dearborn and the surrounding areas. My name is Jay Koronik. Happy to be with you today on September 28th, 2012. Our co-hosts today are Dennis Reimars, our news director of WHFR. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Jay. Oh, I'm coming in crystal clear.
Well, that's a first. I had the mic set in the right position.
Wonderful.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, we're getting better all the time.
Yeah.
Until we're not.
Week, right?
Until next week, yeah. And Joe Sullivan from the show that was just on previously, Big Band Broadway and Beyond. So thank you, Joe, for coming in and allowing us to hear your voice to present some stories for us, too. We got a lot of stories happening in Dearborn, but say a few words.
Good to be here.
Your mic is on. Okay.
All right, yes.
You're on number two.
So. Oh, you're turning his on, too?
Well, yeah, I thought so.
Oh, okay. I guess.
Equality. Yeah. Fairness of opportunity, at least. Anyway, okay. From the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Times Herald newspapers from the local area, the stories of the last week. And we also, of course, you know, cover patch.com. Really do recommend that to you on a daily basis. I understand the Press and Guide will send you daily email messages about news now, too. I haven't subscribed to that yet, but I just found that out last week that they have that service now.
Well, that's a logical way to go because that's a lot, you know, as we know, they're not doing great financially. So
no, but apparently it's part of their plan. And obviously, they're going to have to compete with patch.com, or for free, people can go there every day and get rather equally long, if not longer, stories on a breaking basis. And so that's got to be scary to a published newspaper, unless, of course, you know, a large percentage of people in Dearborn don't know about Patch.com and have not subscribed. But it's very easy to do that, folks. But even Press and Guide will send you daily emails. And I noticed even on their website, pressandguide.com, they have... they're not waiting until, first of all, the paper is published to get the stories in there, or just put a few stories in there, but they're pretty much putting all stories as they get them on the site. At least I think that's the goal. I know that may be difficult, especially since they're going through bankruptcy, but they're still trying to keep going, and I hope they improve, too, with the number of reporters and
well, that's their new coverage model, like we talked about, you know, the online stuff. If I submit an article, let's say 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, in general, it's on there early Thursday.
Yeah. Of course, the compromises of those short deadlines is you don't get, in many cases, the bigger picture. There's no time to do fact-checking. There's no time to get other points of view on the story or do what might be called in-depth. I mean, imagine an extra one day to actually get the facts. It boggles the mind. And that's why there at least were, such things as News Weekly. Sure. Magazines out there nationally, like Newsweek and Time, still both struggling. I subscribe to by mail to a publication called The Week. And how many bookstores are there, or periodical distributors, where you can even get a magazine on a weekly basis, much less newspapers anymore? Maybe some Barnes & Nobles, maybe Borders Books has some.
Borders is gone.
Borders gone. I mean, where have I been? Yeah, of course Borders are gone. So maybe Barnes & Noble does some of that, but they have very small supply. I mean, I know how many magazines are really published. I know how many newspapers are really published locally and elsewhere. And Barnes & Noble does a terrible job. I mean, it must be like 1% of everything that's available. And that's what people think, well, that's all there is. No, that isn't all there is, but that's all they're willing to try to make a buck on. And if they had more, maybe I would shop there. But, you know, one person doesn't make the real difference. One person that knows the difference when most people don't know the difference.
Well, you know, and I spoke with somebody at Barnes & Noble, and their model's changing as well. It's mm-hmm. becoming, you know, look at Amazon. Amazon is very successful, and why? Because they do so much with the e-reader and the e-books. Mm-hmm. Again, pure profit. Once you have that e-book and you have the you pay for the whatever you need, the upfront cost, there's no printing costs. It's a wonderful model for this time, and I mean, it's the only way these places are succeeding.
Yep, I know, and it is tough out there, but I think I wanted to mention The Week. For our listeners, if you can subscribe, they do have a website. They do have an app if you have either an Android or an iPhone where you can check out what they do. What they do is collect the major stories of each week and the major points of view for each story. In other words, they look at the other magazines that are out there and newspapers and editorials that express a different point of view. And so each one of the major stories, they will have, and they don't have to do that much research except in the other journals.
Right.
In other words, they don't have reporters on the scene, but they make sure that they get the most representative spectrum, not just, you know, pro and con, yes or no, liberal or conservative. They get a whole spectrum of opinions, the most succinctly stated paragraph or two, and they weave them into the same story. And, oh, boy, is that helpful. Now, I get it by mail, so it's not only just a week old, it's a week and 3 or 4 days old.
Right.
But what a great spectrum of opinions on each issue, even after a week. You don't get that on TV.
Right.
Again, all the news networks, they're on that deadline of every hour or every day at least, got to have something. And so they're going to make up a lot of it. I'm sorry. They're just going to draw conclusions that have not been fact-checked or raise issues for the controversy alone, not the substance.
What they do that, the thing that's becoming extremely common now is the crowdsourcing. We talked to J. Mm-hmm. Patrick Pepper about this, yeah. Where they won't even speculate themselves, mm-hmm. but they get the crowd to do it, and they just rewrite it. So it's like regurgitated information, but it's an instant, too.
Well, and no disrespect to the crowds, I mean to the majority of people in America, but the average person... And I'm using this a lot now. It's Sarah Palin's criticism of the news media when she was running for vice president. She referred to the majority news media as the lamestream
right.
media. But in fact, that's true. They're not doing the news departments of the large commercial media are not doing enough fact-checking. They're not doing substantive stories. They're doing sensationalism for its own sake, like they used to say about TV news locally, which is still true. When it bleeds, it leads. You go after the crime, you go after the fire. Doesn't matter about anything else. You go after the personal corruption, like the Kwame Kilpatrick trial. Forget about him. He's not even a mayor right now, okay? He's got problems. Maybe he was guilty of something. Some people still love him. Fine. You follow it. Go down to the trial yourself or something. We don't need to have wall-to-wall coverage of that. We don't. I mean, our society has major problems we need to solve, we need information about, and that's out there. So this sort of headline news, this crisis news, or even just, you know, celebrity news, if Kwame was ever a celebrity, and sensational news about crime and fires. Crime and fires are going to happen all the time. And in fact, there's less crime now than ever before in the history of America. There's no crime epidemic. It's just we promote it more. We do. We promote. We advertise it. We get it out there so much you think, oh, there's somebody always getting killed and I'm in danger. And yes, there always was somebody getting killed, but not to the extent that you should believe it's going to be threatening you. Now, I know there are certain neighborhoods of Detroit and certain neighborhoods and elsewhere and alleyways that maybe you shouldn't walk in at certain times of the morning. But that's pretty much always been true, okay? And let's not make more of it than necessary for the sake of ratings. Thank goodness WHFR, we're non-commercial. We don't have to worry about advertisers. We only worry about listeners that care about things and want to get the story more accurately. Well, let's do a story. What the heck?
That sounds like a great
story. He said, well, I haven't heard a story yet, and it's 10 minutes after. Okay. There was a story in the Pressing Guide last Sunday is that it seems that Coca-Cola has now gotten the contract at Dearborn's Ford Center. It's a sponsorship thing. It's a big deal. I think it's $10,000. I'm turning to the paper now. Yes, this is the only local news story on the radio where you can hear the pages turn.
And the microphone.
And hitting the microphone, yeah.
That's real radio, folks.
And 7-Up previously had the contract. Somehow I thought that 7-Up was the same company as Coke, but it isn't, I guess. It's hard to keep up with these conglomerates.
That's right.
The city council of Dearborn voted 7-0, with nobody voting no. So where's Ted Tefalsky now that we need him?
Ouch.
Anyway, to award a 10-year contract to Coca-Cola Refreshments, and that's what they call themselves. I use the term refreshment in quotes, to be the exclusive soft drink beverage provider at city recreation facilities and parks. And parks, too. Including, of course, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, the Dearborn Ice Skating Center, also known as DISC. I saw that in the paper a lot. For months, I didn't know what the hell DISC was. I said, DISC? Is that where you fly frisbees, you know, around or something? What is DISC? Anyway, it's the Dearborn Ice Skating Center. It's up, of course, on Ford Road. And also park vending machines. And Tefalsky said, they're giving the city of Dearborn a heck of a deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful quote. But if you continue on 10A, 7-Up is not a Coke product, and the wall will have to be renamed. There's a climbing wall in the center.
Right.
It says, 7-Up wall, or wall of 7-Up or something.
Doesn't the headline read something about Coke climbing 7-Up?
Yeah, it's bad. The story is bigger than that.
Sure.
This is in the center?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the center. There's a climbing wall. Fake, but there's handholds and footholds, and you put a strap on yourself that goes over the top. And suppose I think somebody's supposed to pull on that, or is it just a bungee cord? Because that'd be a lot of fun bouncing around and slamming into the wall.
I leave that to the kids.
Yeah, I don't know, but I haven't done it. But it's an exercise.
Sure.
It's very strenuous to climb pretty much a vertical wall, I think it is, with these footholds. And some people do that as their only exercise. And so whatever. So there's their fake wall. So the wall has got to have its name changed. But then all these machines will be Coke products, not 7-Up products. And the problem I have with that is, most of Coca-Cola's products, just like most of 7-Up, are of no nutritive value to anyone. You might think they're refreshing, but they're technically, with the bubbles in them, not thirst-quenching. Any sort of carbonated beverage, as any DJ knows, is not thirst-quenching. You should not be drinking carbonated beverages if you're an announcer on radio or TV. Okay, in the good old days, Russ Gibb always drank a particular diet soft drink on his cable TV show for 2 hours, or was it 4 hours, or whatever. And he was known for that, and he couldn't do it without it. But I think it was the caffeine that he liked, right. not necessarily the... Because he, of course, smart enough to know that the bubbles will kill you, and kills your voice. Maybe you can still be good in spite of it, but that's not the issue. There's bad chemicals. Yes, there are chemicals in some of our diet soft drinks that are even banned in Canada as unsafe for human consumption. Aspartame, for one thing, is about 30% of people that will consume aspartame in a diet soda get headaches as a reaction to the aspartame. 30%, I think. Okay, could be wrong, but it's a high percent, high enough that Canada says we don't want it in any of your drinks because we'd be allowing people to get headaches. And maybe they'd attribute the headaches to something else, you know, and then take other drugs on top of it. Sure. When it's just the diet beverage drink they're drinking. And then you say, well, I'll drink pure sugar drinks then, you know. Well, guess what, folks? Empty calories. That's what it is. Sugar, you know, we consume too much sugar. That's one of the reasons we're getting fat. So thank you, Dearborn City Council, for getting all that money for yourselves and for our parks and the center and income. I know we need that. But absolutely bad, bad, bad. I mean, I don't even like the drink machines here at Henry Ford Community College. But boy, the money it brings in for them. Because they get a percent of the sales from the machines. Or it's a big contract they get, at least. And maybe all the machines, you know, profit goes back to the vendor. But I don't know. But it's so lucrative, it's hard to say no. But K-Coke, they do Dasani bottled water. What would that cost us? $3 for a bottle of water? Well, that's not right. Right. That's about the only healthy drink or non-harmful drink that's there. So whenever I see all these vending machines, I hope all of you will start kicking into more healthy living. You shouldn't be drinking any soda pop. The carbonation is bad in general. Although it tickles your throat, okay. The diet, sugar substitute chemicals are bad for you, and even the sugar, because we consume so much sugar, whether we know it or not, in other sources anyway, is bad for us. And so, should government make that choice for us? No, but they shouldn't be doing things to make sure that's the only choice. Okay, the only choice are bad choices. Just, I want to say another machine, because I went to a concert at the center a couple of weeks ago, and I got there late, didn't have time for food, and I thought, oh, I can eat some food there. And, of course,
what do they have?
No live seller of food anymore. I mean, they used to have Buddies, used to have another place that had a little bar, and it would always be open before events so people could snack. Sometimes even during events, if there was an intermission, they would keep it open. And during the day, it was usually open for lunch and, you know, fresh sandwiches, whatever cooked up for even the people that work at the center or visit the center. That's totally gone. There's no live food vendor there. And maybe they just couldn't make a profit. I don't know. But what's there? Well, machines.
Right.
Okay. Some machines have frozen foods in them. You know, packaged foods. I tried a burrito. How harmful could that be?
How do you feel?
Well, it was terrible. Of course, frozen food generally, when you heat it up, is terrible. And they had a microwave to heat it up.
Okay.
But here, and of course, all those soft drinks, thanks, no thanks, there. But now they're going to be Coke soft drinks, Coke products. Guess what? You can get a food, you can microwave it, but there's no plates for it. You have to hold it in its plastic wrapper while it burns your hands. And then, okay, they give you a fork and a knife, but, you know, no plate, and guess what? No napkins.
Oh, no.
No napkins. Well, thanks, but no thanks. I mean, what good is even that food vending area if you can't? I know the city would lose money providing free napkins, I'm sure, and plates, but what the hell's going on? I guess if you worked there regularly, you'd bring your own plate or something and your own napkins. I just couldn't believe that's what it's come to. And the people there are mostly volunteers in the center, at least for the concert. And with all due respect, most of them knew nothing. I was seated in the wrong place because the ushers knew nothing about the ticketing process and what the tickets even meant. There's a difference between the rows and the pit.
Sure.
I was in the pit. I'm often in the pits, but this time I was in the closer area, and that was cool. I paid for it, you know. But the ushers didn't know. They put me in the wrong place. I got kicked out.
Did you
confusion.
Really?
So there's a limit. I mean, I love volunteers because Dennis and Joe are volunteers here at WHFR. Love you guys. Love everybody at WHFR who volunteers here for a good cause. But without the adequate training and supervision by at least a couple of people, volunteers will not do the job. Now, there's a crisis at the Historical Museum in Dearborn now. Sure. They have almost no budget. The city's almost cut every single penny, not all of it. They got 10 grand or whatever. They've already fired the curator, the person who actually knows the value and process of receiving, caring for, and databasing historical items. They fired him. He's gone. That was last year. Oh, he's been gone for a year. A small group of wonderful volunteers are trying to hold their own, but they said without more volunteers and more fundraising, that's going to have to close too. And I know somebody from the city said, well, you know, most cities, they run their historical museum with the volunteers. Yeah, but I've been to a lot of small towns. It's a little house, and like there's one person, and nobody's adding to the collection. Nobody's curating it, and it's a small collection in these little towns. We got a big collection. Dearborn has a lot of history. It goes back a long ways, you know, before the Civil War or whatever for this area, and or at least to the Civil War anyway. And, you know, that's pathetic to say, oh, well, let's just let the volunteers do it. Almost as bad, and I've told people this too in the past, about the library. We can only have so many libraries. We need professional librarians. Well, what background do you need to be a librarian? A master's degree. It's called library science, folks. Not just a bachelor's degree, not just a two-year degree at Henry Ford Community College, because we don't have such a thing, because we know it's impossible. Librarians have to be really smart about information, where to get it, how to store it, how to access it. Okay, you follow the point? Terrible trend to try to run the city that way exclusively. That's terrible. And so thanks, but no thanks, Tom Tufelski and the rest of the council who thought 7-0, oh yeah, let's put unhealthy soft drinks there again because we get money. Doesn't your conscience hurt you? It should, because you're not giving choices for those of us that want healthy, real food and or plates and napkins.
Yeah. Doesn't it seem like that they would be able to work out a similar, some kind of a contract with, like you said, a live vendor where somebody would come over there, even if it's like a deli cart or something?
The problem is good food, healthy food spoils.
True. Those consumer
products. And they can't make a profit by putting them in machines that way. That's because true. After 2 days, even if the machine is slightly refrigerated, it'll be all wilted. It'll be unhealthy. Even got mayonnaise on it. I just bought a chicken sandwich at our grill, our live grill here at Henry Ford Community College Student Center. Even if I keep that in the refrigerator tomorrow or certainly the next day, it's going to be very suspicious whether I should eat that.
Sure.
You know,
we should test this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can test it, Dennis. But
I'm not hungry.
I'll save you half of the sandwich for that test, and we'll see how you are on Monday. And Joe, you have any comments about the these vending machines? Am I just real crazy? Or?
Well, no. One thing I just wonder, like you said, I have some like orange juice or something. Would they put something like that in? Could they?
They could. Yeah, they haven't. They will put orange flavored soda pop.
Right.
Yeah.
Carbonated.
Yeah.
It's not like here at the Skylight Cafe. They have a nice array of juices: apple, orange juice, a couple different kinds.
Right. Well, some of those can be packaged, but usually, if you look closely, those have preservatives in them of some sort. So those are the bottled, sealed juice beverages, and they seem. But if you look close, they're not 100% juice.
Right.
Okay. They've added sugar.
It's better than nothing, though, and I guess it's better than the carbonation.
It might be a little closer. It might be a little closer to what you're looking for, but still, we have almost no healthy choices opposite WHFR's entrance, which is where the vending machines are in the building. But thank goodness, during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, we do have food at the Skylight Cafe, as Dennis said, which is right across the way. And if we made a reservation, the very popular 5101 restaurant run right in this building by our hospitality department, they actually have sit-down meals, very reasonable, don't usually have the time to do that. And so, you know, well, you know, I just don't get there. Although today, on Friday, luckily I got a sandwich before the show because at 2 o'clock they closed down. So there's not even a choice. I'm stuck here till 6. I can't go back and get food. But I guess there's just not enough people around to make a profit. But at least it's free food. It's healthy food. It's prepared right here by our own chefs and cooks. So I have to diss a little bit there, the group. Of course, Tufelski, he did. Become the lone man out on another issue from the city council, and that was the council voted and approved by 6-1 with Tufelski dissenting to give $75,000 to the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority Fund for architectural work to transform the current city hall into an artist living working space that would be owned by ArtSpace. And he voted no.
Well, he was against the move in the first place.
Well, first of all, you give the money to them for architectural work. They're going to start the work now?
Before it's
ArtSpace open. Doesn't even own it yet. They're still looking for the grants. Yeah. Now, they'll probably get them there. They have a big rep, as I said last week and the week before, nationally. And they've gotten grants to establish such centers in many other cities. And so why wouldn't they get enough grants this time? But the simple fact is they don't have the money yet. So are we starting to already change this into living quarters? Maybe if that doesn't work, they can rent out for condos or something, for the average person. So I think for a number of reasons, yeah, he voted no. First of all, he doesn't like the whole project of selling City Hall. Place, yeah. It's after the fact, though, but... If it's really true that they're going to start, $75,000, you can't buy much. I know I just tried to price a bathroom renovation. New bathtub, tile, okay. $10,000, well, it was actually $11,000. Thank you, Sears Home Improvement. And I haven't done any other bids. I'm so bummed out. But then I read in Consumer Reports magazine, the average remodeling of a bathroom is at least $5,000 for a tub only. And it's typically $11,000 to $14,000.
Wow.
To redo the whole bathroom. That's fittings and, you know, tile and, oh my gosh. So what does $75,000 buy? A couple of bathrooms?
Yeah.
I mean, but are they starting now? Or is it just actually asking the architect for a plan for what it would really take to renovate the place for numerous living spaces? I assume that's what it is. If that's what it is, I'm in favor of giving them a $75,000, I guess, at this point. Because the cost has to be known, I think, by even ArtSpace. But if it's actually to start the renovations now, no, it's way premature. It was, I thought, too, I'm sorry to be as picky as Tefelsky on this one, but it's premature to actually buy the ADP building and say we're going to move City Hall no matter what, even before the old building is sold. Because that's going to cost us a fortune to keep or renovate. And who's going to buy it if ArtSpace doesn't? Who's really going to buy it? I mean, it's well-located property, which means they got to tear down the whole building and the whole parking lot. Well, maybe they wouldn't tear down the parking lot, but I understand that's crumbling too. So, yeah, tearing it down and starting over is fine, but there's a tremendous cost to tearing it down and taking all that stuff out and starting over. Boy.
From what I understand, they got the deal that they have on the new building was contingent on timing.
It wasn't going to be available. I said that last week. It wouldn't be available much longer. So, well, I don't know. Somebody, I don't know. Yeah, businesses. We got a lot of open business space in Dearborn for rental of offices.
Sure.
My guess is, yeah, it's good to get it while it seems to be cheap. And I don't know if they have to, well, they don't have to finance it. They just pay it up in cash. But,
right.
I really wonder if it would have been off the market that quick.
That's what I'm saying. Can't you do something very contingent big on building. The sale of our building kind of a thing? You know, like the same option.
Well, they probably wouldn't have gone for it, but I would have proposed that, yeah.
Or just have the art serve, which we call the art.
ArtSpace
buy that building, and then we'll just keep City Hall.
Interesting.
I think
it's way too much for them. Actually, yeah. The space involved at the new City Hall, I'll call it, is enough to hold not only the administration, but also they're talking about possibly if they need to moving in the was it the Board of Education?
Yes, and that would help to pay for the cost of the building and would
consolidating.
We'll see if they decide to do that, but they've got tonight building falling apart, falling down.
You're not
there's
kidding.
Been no discussion at this point what they're going to do about that. They don't have any money. They've admitted period zero to even fix it. So. I think as soon as City Hall building is open and functioning, they really should make the decision then to move in or not because it has to do with renovations and.
Yeah, but now they have all this new money coming in from vending.
Okay, sorry. Well, apparently a little more than the 7-Up contract, but I thought there was a price there, but it's obviously it's not $10,000 for 10 years. It must be a ton of money, maybe $100,000 a year or something. I don't know. It's a ton of money, but they're going to make a ton of profit and. But yet not give people using those facilities a choice of healthy food.
Right.
Now, I have to say, at grocery stores, when I go to the shop, almost everybody in line in front of me and behind me, the majority of what's in their cart are soft drinks.
Really?
2-liter soft drinks. 28,000 cans or packs. Everybody buys soft drinks. It's like the number one thing on their diet, I guess. Or they think they're on a diet because they're buying diet in some cases. I just want to shake them and throttle them. I must be a socialist.
You can't. That carbonation would make
you're killing yourselves. You're killing your kids. I know it's advertised. I know it seems to be refreshing. And everybody loves sugar. Our bodies are just love sugar. Yeah, we'll consume it until we die, which will be very quick if we don't stop ourselves. It's so readily available. Yes, genetically we love sugar. It's not good for us, though. When our genes were put together, the million years ago, there was so little, like maybe once a year we'd find some strawberries or something on the vine. And that's a different kind of sugar, by the way. That's fructose in the natural berries and so on. And it was only like once a year for a couple weeks that we'd get that. And so we loved it. But the major diet, like 99.9% of the year, we're eating meat that we shoot, kill, harvest, and later, of course, growing crops. But that's a problem too for us if you believe in the paleo diet.
Yeah,
it should just be high protein sources of meat and berries and fruits when available. And even my doctor on the diet I'm on, and I've got a really good doctor in Royal Oak, that's working with me on diet. He agrees with the Mediterranean diet in general, and as look it up, folks. But nothing white. Nothing white. He's a racist.
Really?
Nothing white. No, I mean, he means no white flour.
Right.
Nothing has white flour in it, like pastries, donuts, bread, and no potatoes. Potatoes
really?
Are white. Yeah.
Okay.
And those are high glycemic. And that's the only way I've been able to lose 30 pounds since January.
Yep.
Is by cutting out the bread and the potatoes. Now, I love potatoes. But actually, the paleo diet says they didn't eat much of that stuff. Very little, very little grains because they didn't have time to stay in one place. They were all sort of nomadic living off the environment would change the diet. So I'm not saying they didn't live very long, apparently a million years ago because of a variety of things. But, we have lost since 1990. Average life expectancy for men and women in America has dropped 5 years.
Really?
5 years since 1990. Average life expectancy for men and women. Why? Because we've got such rotten diets.
Yeah.
Okay? And we're so overweight. And we've got to change our thinking about that. Forget about those TV commercials. Forget about what other people are doing. Forget about what your taste buds tell you. And, I even heard Fox News. They were berating and proclaiming, yay, students are protesting too many vegetables at lunch. Fox, do you ever check facts? Vegetables are actually good for you. And if prepared properly, they're totally delicious. My mother, back in the 50s when I was growing up, she made vegetables every night. They were delicious. They were wonderful. Other kids would tell me I was growing up with, oh, I hate broccoli, I hate beans. How did your mother prepare them? Did she make them all sick and wishy-washy? There must have been a problem because vegetables, when prepared just like stir-fried or just slightly cooked, is that al dente? No,
it's called, come on.
Just cooked enough to be cooked.
Right.
Without being
tender
soggy.
Tender crisp.
Something like that. They're wonderful. And you don't need a lot of salt on them even because if it's natural, garden-grown local farm vegetables and fruits, they're so tasty. I don't really like tomatoes. Do you ever taste a real tomato out of somebody's real garden grown organically? They're so wonderful tasting. But the tomatoes you get, and the apples we're getting now because all the apple crop died in Michigan because of the early summer and the hot weather early on, they're from other states. They're not grown. The ones are not grown organically. They're shipped in here. They look okay. No taste and flavor. They fit in your mouth. You can chew them and swallow them, but there's no taste or flavor compared to the natural ones that are grown locally and especially organically. So if you know the difference, you got to tell people about this and you got to stop them from what they're doing, but not physically.
Right.
Everybody has a right to kill themselves early if they want to. Just don't have government doing that. But, Fox News is going on and on about, our government, those socialists, they're forcing our kids to eat vegetables, half of their meal vegetables at lunch, and they can have as much as they want of fruits and vegetables, but not the main course, which is still bad for you. But,
Salisbury steak or something.
Okay, the government paid for it. If you don't want to eat it, you don't have to, but you're not going hungry eating fruits and vegetables. And And in fact, did the kids make the protest? No, it was their teacher. Their teacher thunk it up.
And you're saying that Fox kind of put this out there, their slant on it was well, good for the teachers?
Well, no, it was good for, they said, oh, the students did it. The students don't like fruits and vegetables. Well, somebody ought to tell them.
Right.
Like their mothers, okay, that fruits and vegetables are not only good for you, but they're delicious and tasty if you wouldn't be brainwashed in the first place. And no, thank you, Fox News, for not giving us the real story there and turning it into a political diatribe against our socialist government, which we don't have a socialist government, not technically. It's a combination of democracy and socialism. It is. It always has been, since the 1930s anyway. And it's not pure socialism. And even pure socialism, if you just read about it, read about those governments that are socialist. We're not talking about Hitler. He was a tyrant. He was a dictator. He wasn't a socialist. He was a tyrant, okay? He was a dictator. That's not socialism, folks. Oh, he called it national socialism, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't socialism. Oh, my God. Okay, a lot of people that don't know the truth. A couple nice things, though, and I'll say something nice about Ford. This is not an ad. The Ford Fusion, that is their new hybrid version of Fusion, did debut in Dearborn about a week or so ago. And the hybrid is the one that has batteries, but also gasoline engine. You don't plug it in at night, but it's got so many batteries that the engine will charge them. And you'll probably go 10 or 15 miles when the battery's charged up without even needing the gas engine, but it'll kick in whenever needed automatically. You won't even realize it. So, the story here, they've had that before. In fact, our president here, Dr. Gail Mee, has a Ford hybrid Escape.
Escape, yeah.
You know, which they're not making anymore as a hybrid, but nonetheless, they have a new small vehicle called the C-Max.
Right.
It's like a small minivan, sort of. It's a little bigger than the Prius station wagon, and that's going to be hybrid and similar engine here. 47 miles to a gallon.
Wow.
Average. 40, or is that highway? Highway, I guess.
It has to be highway. Sure.
But and a couple of car magazines that I read who really have good reviewers, they've tested some of these briefly on the road, and they were getting over 50 miles to a gallon on the road with the hybrid. That's wonderful. That beats everybody else. Good for Ford. That's the 1.6-liter EcoBoost engine. No, that is rated at only 37 miles per gallon. And again, that's probably highway. And 2-liter EcoBoost, 33 miles per gallon. But that is, the big 240 horsepower. All of those are wonderful. But this, I want to tell people about this, just as it's a choice, okay? Ford will have their energy version, the plug-in hybrid that Toyota has now. But their energy plug-in hybrid has already been tested. It runs all on batteries. No, it's a plug-in hybrid. No, it has an engine, but it has a lot of batteries. Okay, a lot more batteries, and it will go like maybe 30 miles, 40 miles on batteries. And every night, the gasoline engine alone won't charge those batteries enough, so you got to plug it in your garage or to your house somewhere.
So what is the gasoline engine
estimated,
for?
Well, it's just in an emergency.
Right, so if you don't get caught out somewhere.
Yeah,
right.
You won't get caught anywhere because it's got a little putt-putt three-cylinder engine that will keep you rolling down the road until you can get it really charged. But I love the idea I have for 5 years of plug-in hybrids.
Sure.
Because the estimated miles per gallon for average use, that is, you know, some extended use but daily driving, is over 100 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Average.
Wow, that's like a moped.
That's the average. Because it's primarily an electric car for 30 miles a day.
Yeah.
Every night you plug it in, and I understand a full charge, like a full tank of gas, will cost you maybe $80 to $1, but that's like 1/4 of a gallon's price right now.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's that should be only about $35,000, $36,000. They haven't announced the final price on the Fusion Energy. That's spelled with an I at the end, not a Y. That's going to be a game changer, along with this Fusion and the C-Max hybrids, which people will note, hey, that's a lot more miles per gallon.
Right.
That's the best in the industry. So Ford is making the right step. I know Chrysler, GM, they'll all be there soon. But if you're looking for a new car,
do you still get brakes?
Consider something that good.
Do you still get kind of breaks from the government on when you get a car like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because they've had like the hybrid engine out for quite a while in the Ford, and I'm not sure. I think once they sell so many, like 8,000 models, then it doesn't, it's no good anymore. Like Toyota hybrids, I believe, none of them have any rebate now because they've been on the market so long.
Right.
So should the government continue those incentives for a while?
I don't know.
You know,
that's hard. It's a big transitional time, too, like you said.
Okay, well, we're in 40 minutes there. We've got to regroup here, but let's listen to a couple comments from Jim Hightower. First of all, a tsunami is coming, as he calls it, of political slime. And we've already experienced it. Been watching TV, listen to those ads, especially about some of the proposals on the ballot for this fall. Well, it's going to get worse. Here's Jim Hightower, and then he brings up about some tax dodgers. Oh, you hate those people that pay no money, right, on taxes? Like, especially the ones who are millionaires. Here we go, Jim Hightower, WHFR.FM, the station, making waves.
Mark Hanna, the Karl Rove of the old robber baron era, explained long ago that there are two things that are important in politics. The first is money, and I can't remember the second. In just the past decade, corporate cash has moved from merely talking in our elections to shouting, and now to sliming. A new report by two public interest organizations, Demos and U.S. PIRG, documents that the people's voice was shouted down in this year's presidential primaries by a tsunami of slime, an unprecedented wave of negative super PAC ads financed by a few plutocratic super donors. How few? Only 1,082. A mere 0.0004% of the U.S. population put up 94% of the cash for all the super PAC ads. Well over half of that money came from, get this, only 47 special interest funders putting up $1 million or more each. Far from providing electoral enlightenment, a staggering 70% of this year's presidential ads have been negative attacks, mostly vitriolic, depressingly nasty ads. That's up from only 9% 4 years ago. Count on this ugly money assault growing more extreme this fall as unlimited cash floods directly from corporate coffers into secret front groups run by the likes of Karl Rove and the Koch brothers. In July, the Senate debated a modest bill to require that corporate donors who are spreading this slime at least have to tell voters who they are. But a Republican filibuster shut down the debate and prevented a vote from even being taken. GOP leader Mitch McConnell rose on his hind legs to defend the clandestine corporate purchase of the People's Democratic Authority, bizarrely blathering that disclosing the names of the purchasers would amount to donor harassment. This is Jim Hightower saying, to see the full report, go to demos.org. It's always refreshing to hear a multimillionaire tax dodger smugly disparage poor people. Mitt Romney is the multimillionaire's name, the man from Bain who says he should be our president. Well, not everyone's president. At a $50,000 a plate fundraiser in the Tony town of Boca Raton, Florida, Romney heaped scorn on the, quote, 47% of Americans who pay no income tax. These shirkers, Mitt declared, believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. This from a man with 3 houses, 12 tax shelters in the Cayman Islands, and at least 1 secret Swiss bank account. He then asserted contemptuously that my job is not to worry about those people. And who are those people? Who were dubbed lucky duckies by the Wall Street Journal for avoiding income taxes? The poor. Mostly they're Social Security retirees whose benefits are too low to be taxed, poorly paid soldiers in Afghanistan and single moms whose meager paychecks entitle them to a child tax credit, disabled veterans and workers who've been maimed on the job. Lucky duckies, indeed. Yet, despite their poverty and Romney's snarkiness, they do pay lots and lots of taxes. Payroll taxes, federal fees, sales taxes, local and state assessments, etc. In fact, the poorest Americans pay a higher percentage of their income in state, local, and other federal levies than the richest pay. People making under $20,000 a year, for example, pay nearly a fourth of their income in such taxes, a far bigger percentage than Romney himself pays. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, Mitt didn't mention that there's one special group in the no-tax club he mocks, millionaires. Last year, some 4,000 households with income above $1 million paid zero federal income tax. Where's his scorn for these real tax dodgers?
That was Jim Hightower. Go to jimhightower.com if you want more information about Jim and his books and his tours. We really appreciate his insights. I try to pick comments that are pretty general about changes needed in our society and problems, not necessarily political. Okay, he mentioned Mitt Romney in that last one, so my apologies. Remember, all the opinions expressed on this show, including those of Jim Hightower, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, including Dennis and Joe. Joe, give us one of our stories.
Okay.
What about this? This is great. Something free.
Yes, at the Dearborn Public Library and the Dearborn Federal Credit Union are teaming up to bring residents three free financial seminars. They'll be held on September 29th, October 20th, and November 10th. The presentations will be made by Charles Hoff, an accredited financial counselor, and who's been with the credit union for more than 15 years. The first step is a financial fitness plan to set up a budget, debt-free living, held on Saturday, September 29th. We'll discuss and develop the use of a budget to help achieving long-range goals.
That's tomorrow, folks, September 29th. And that would be like for everybody. It's one thing they don't teach in the schools, and that's, you know, how to live debt-free, how to live responsibly, I think that would be a good touch-up. You say, well, they might make a pitch for credit unions. Most credit unions are nonprofits, by the way, folks.
Right.
And I highly recommend them. When you know the difference between a commercial bank and a local credit union, you may also want to choose a credit union. But it doesn't have to be the DFCU. We have great friends at the Dearborn. It used to be the Dearborn Schools Credit Union. Now it's the
Member Focus
Credit Union in Dearborn. And almost anybody, one way or the other, can join either one of those. It's not a sort of limited as it was before. There are ways that they can get you into membership. Like your fourth relative back on your dog's side or something is going to qualify you.
It's not quite that easy.
But DFCU used to be exclusively for Ford Motor employees.
Right.
Well, they took me in.
It's not as easy as having the relative on your dog's side. But they brag about this. The Member Focus I know talks about how as a member of their credit union, you're an owner. In other words, you can
actually go and vote. It's a membership thing if you want to vote and change directions. DFCU had a big scandal a couple of years ago. They wanted to they wanted to go statewide, or they wanted to be a commercial. They wanted to go commercial bank. And all their board of directors voted for it. Well, all the people in it said, no, you better not. And they had petitions and ballots and signs out front and everything, and they decided not to.
Good for them. Good.
And DFCU right now, I think, is the biggest credit union in Michigan, and they're making huge profits, and they give extra rebates on interest every year, fairly substantial in January, because it's all compacted together at one time, for extra bonus, you might say, for their profits of the year. And I'm just saying they are a very good choice. And the what are the other two in the dates quickly? The other two seminars are different topics.
Saturday, October 20th, it's the pre-retirement wealth builder will teach attendees strategies to money management that will get them to retirement in a financially healthy state.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, November 10th, post-retirement wealth retention.
That's what I want to know.
And this seminar will provide guidance on how to preserve what you've accumulated while offering ideas on how to live comfortably on a less income during retirement.
Right. Three different audiences there. This story, by the way, if you wanted to read it for yourself, is, of course, you can go to dfc.org, I believe it is. This is in the Times Herald from this last Wednesday, 9/26. Free financial seminars offered at DFCU. And you don't have to use the credit union. These are ideas for money management and debt-free living living at less expense they're putting on there. Of course, you can read books. Books on this, folks, everywhere. So
This is a nice service.
Yeah, nice service. It's a free service, and it's open to everybody. I think there is some RSVP. Is there something at the bottom there about?
Yes. It says there's no cost to attend, but registration is required. Those who wish may sign up one or two, all three seminars by calling the Henry Ford Centennial Library at 313-943-2330.
Okay, Henry Ford Centennial Library. Tomorrow it's 10 a.m. start? Looking back? Okay. Well, he's looking at that. While he's looking for that reference again.
10:30 a.m.
Okay.
Right. Right, noon, to noon.
But call him first. Okay. Libraries might join the pistol-free zone list. Joe, what's that about? No, that wasn't the story you have. It's also about pistols. Your story is about Mayor O'Reilly.
Right.
Go ahead.
Mayor O'Reilly.
He's a pistol, isn't he?
Yeah. He joined a coalition of other Michigan mayors that would oppose a bill to eliminate the requirement of background checks on handgun sales by private parties. Currently, background checks are required for any person looking to purchase a handgun in Michigan, be it from a dealer or a private owner. House Bill 5225, which was passed by the State House of Representatives in June and currently sits before the State Senate, would change that. And according to the Mayors Against Illegal Guns Coalition, that compromises half of all gun sales in Michigan and would make it easier for convicted felons, domestic abusers, and others who are banned from gun ownership easier to obtain a handgun, no questions asked.
First of all, you can't stop private sales by law because, you know, a guy will just sell it to the guy next door. And, I mean, so there's a law, but if nobody finds out, if it's just one person or another.
Right.
So I'm against laws that are unenforceable. They sure sound darn good.
Sure.
And yes, you could prosecute after the fact once you found out that this person had the gun illegally. Throw away the book. But that's not going to stop that. I'm wondering about gun shows, though. Okay, there's usually a gun show every month or two down at Gibraltar Trade Center in Gibraltar, Michigan.
Sure. Everywhere.
And do you need clearance to buy something from one of those people? Because even an average person like myself could buy a table and sell stuff that I own. And if I'm selling a gun, I mean, I could sell, you know, like holsters without worrying about it. But if I was actually selling a gun, do I have to somehow get the it's a federal government license now that everybody has to do. It's not a state license. I think the state got rid of that requirement for the double licensing. But I know about the federal license because all gun dealers, official dealers, like even Cabela's, you have to fill out that federal form, and they have to submit it, and it has to be cleared before you can pick up your weapon.
That's handguns, not rifles, right?
No, rifles too now.
Rifles too now.
Yeah. Yeah, it used to be didn't need it for rifle, just handguns, but that's right. Changed. It's all guns now, but it's easy to get as long as you don't have a felony on your record somewhere that they find out about. And I don't even think it cost it. I'm not even sure it cost anything to get that application. Maybe the dealers pay a cost for you. I don't know. Should that be the case or not? Well, it's nice for the mayor politically to say, you know, we're against opening it up to private sales. It's just unenforceable, I think. And of course, the police, we know what side they're on. They don't want more guns out there either. But there's already so many guns and so many people have guns. It's not a matter of it. You can't hold back this tide. Okay. And despite the fact that there is that Second Amendment that says we have the right to bear arms. Okay. And roll up your shirt sleeves. That's what that means. You can roll up your shirt sleeves anytime you want to and bare your arms.
Aren't there some Aren't there some countries? And I want to say Switzerland, where they have kind of liberal gun laws, but everybody's required to know exactly how to use it.
Well, yeah, of course, and I've said that too. We don't have enough training that goes along with the licensing. I'm in favor of licensing. That's sure. Fine. And training. Those are dangerous weapons. But so is driving a car. A car is a dangerous weapon. You could kill yourself and or many other people with that car. And so we require licensing and supervised training, you know, over a significant period. And we don't do that for initial gun ownership. No. We do that in Michigan sort of for a concealed weapon.
Right.
But that's compressed in about 6 hours. You can get them at gun shows. You sign up in advance. You take a six-hour course. And they'll give you your concealed carry permit, or at least you can send it in to get it from the state after that. And that's not enough.
No,
that's not enough because you're not. Can that person even shoot straight? I know there's like part of it is one or two shots at a target. Well, that doesn't.
That's nothing.
But right. If you have a target, like 6 feet away, and you can't hit it in the center. But you hit the ceiling, or you hit, you know, something to the side, then I guess you shouldn't get that. But that's for only concealed carry.
Right.
Everybody. Now, of course, catch 22. How can you learn to shoot until you get a gun? Well, okay, I know.
There's a process.
There's a process.
To me, that's a deterrent. If I'm a bad guy and I'm thinking, I'm gonna break, I would like to break into that house, but if I know there's a good chance there's a gun there and they know how to use it.
Well, in driver ed, there's classroom instruction about the laws and the rules and the principles involved with driving, and there's out on the road
application.
Okay, and you go back and forth for weeks. Okay, and you could do that with guns. You could have the gun range. You could have the sit-down instruction, you know. Maintenance of the gun is very important. If you don't maintain it properly, it could blow up in your face. It could jam. But certainly, accuracy. Somebody that just can't shoot straight should not get a gun.
Right.
But give them a chance. Give them an extended, not 6 hours, give them an extended training period. And, you know, the NRA, and I am a member of the NRA, although I don't go along with most of what they advocate, but they have a great training program. I think it's called Eddie Eagle or something for high schoolers. Right. So if you're in junior high or high school, you can set up in the high school. It'll be an optional club or whatever, a shooting class, a class training people, training the kids actually how to shoot straight and what the laws and rules are. Now you might say, well, that advocates gun violence. I don't think so. I really don't. I think it's better to learn how to do it responsibly. Now, maybe those kids will go on not even to own a weapon, but if a weapon happens to fall in their lap and they need to use it properly for some reason, they'll know up front exactly how dangerous it is. I mean, most kids don't even know how dangerous a gun is. Okay, they don't know how, like even .38 caliber can go right through the wall of a house and kill somebody standing outside. It was most ammunition. For 38, certainly 45s and 44s and all. So, I mean, I've just read enough and studied enough to know how dangerous handguns are. And so we need proper training and instruction. Not to everybody, maybe, but those that choose to have it, those that choose to have a gun. And maybe as a hobby, you know, for a club in junior high or high school. I don't see a problem with that as long as it's done in a professional, responsible way.
That's interesting. And you know, you had talked about driver's ed as part of mine when I took it 100 years ago. We had simulated as well. We had actual driving for practical. Mm-hmm. We had classroom and then we had simulated. And the way video games are now, wouldn't that be an excellent experience to teach? No, seriously. It's very, you know, it could be accurate to a degree.
The trouble with simulating, they can never simulate the actual physical forces of like the G forces going around a corner or stopping quickly.
But somebody playing
a video game, you don't feel any of that. So it's not the real world. You get out there. I remember when I was learning how to drive, I decided I was going a little quickly. I wanted to turn a corner, and I turned corners before safely, but it was a little faster than I expected. Oh, my God, the car almost flew out of control. Luckily, nobody was coming. It was just a right-angle turn in a residential street, but it was a little bit faster. I didn't brake enough. I didn't believe the force of the car, you know, pulling me out to make it a wider curve.
Right.
You know, that comes from experience in the real world.
True.
A video game can never do that unless it's some fancy-dancy simulator like for pilots where the whole simulated cockpit actually moves up and down and forward and back to give you some of that real-world feeling. But it's not practical in a video game. But, yeah, everything helps. And the only thing that doesn't help, and I actually had a full class in high school, that is every day of the week, for 1 hour, for one semester, it was meeting with a driver ed teacher, and most of those classes were all about, he got photos from the Detroit Free Press of the results of bad car accidents. That is all the blood and the guts. And he'd show us those every single, this is what happens if you're not a careful driver. Well, we finally just tuned it out. You know, we just couldn't take any more. So it didn't. I don't think that's proactive to scare you into good driving.
Right.
Maybe to scare you to pay attention, okay, but once, but twice, three times now, you're going to tune that out. So you can't drive fearful of driving. You have to be knowledgeable, but to drive fearful is...
Well, one of your axioms and one that resonated with me is you're a big advocate of high-performance vehicles. Why? Because they're safer if you know how to drive.
That's right. They're safer if you know how to use them properly.
That's proactive.
And that requires... That's another thing. I think driver ed should include... high-speed driving maneuvers, as well as ice and snow.
Absolutely.
Like, as I said, in England, you can't get a license in England unless you take one of the parts of driver instruction is to get you out on a track that they use. It's a special substance, and then they wet it with water, and it's just like sheet ice. But it's useful in practicing skidding and accident avoidance in any weather. So you don't have to wait for the ice and the snow to come to practice that. And they teach the proper skills for skidding, driving, maneuvering the car in bad weather. And that's not taught here. And it could be taught. And it would be so great, especially in Michigan, because as soon as it snows and gets icy, all these people are all over the road because nobody ever taught them how to properly drive.
That's true.
And eventually, after a couple accidents, minor accidents, hopefully, here in Michigan, people will just slow down. And that'll help.
Or stay home.
Yeah, and that will help a little bit. But there are techniques to actually help you, not drive as fast maybe, but to drive safely in spite of bad weather. It's nothing to be afraid of. Oh, I'm so afraid it's snowing. Well, if you had that training and that knowledge, it wouldn't be so bad, okay? You'd still probably drive slower than normal, but it wouldn't be as unsafe for you and anyone else. Okay, what other stories? You only have a couple minutes left. We're waiting for, of course, Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61 to begin in just a couple moments. It's WHFR Dearborn you're listening to. Our podcast goes on a couple minutes, so we'll keep talking. What the heck? Dearborn and Melvindale, according to the Times-Herald, you know, our fire departments were in discussion about merging. And it looks like they've got a proposal, and the Dearborn fire chief is going to soon bring it up. It's here he is, Dearborn Fire Chief Joseph Murray. He plans to present a formal letter to the City Council, Dearborn City Council, requesting to put the plan in motion. The timeline is undetermined because the joint fire department idea is still in its infancy. So I don't know how soon that is, if the idea is in its infancy, or whether or not the city council might say yay or nay before they even get further about that. And certainly there's concerns for the people of Dearborn. Does that mean when we thought we had adequate staffing that they're going to stretch them even further?
No, this is similar to the situation in with Dearborn Heights and Garden City, which is already entering past its 90th day. So as Mayor Poletko had said, if he felt this was something they could do, he figured it should be done within 90 days or so. So, but the point is, now it's logistics. And I'll bet you anything, the big holdup, Jay, will be who will be in charge, who will run the whole show, because you can only have one chief. And I know that they worked that out in Dearborn Heights, where Chief Gurka would stay aboard as the chief, and then they would have deputy chiefs or whatever. But it seems to me Dearborn being the bigger station. No, am I wrong? Do you have something there?
No, absolutely. But the simple fact is, you know, there's in the charter, we have to have so many full-time firefighters and police, minimum, for staffing. Both the police department and the fire department, it is my, and I don't see it here in the story, but I've seen it elsewhere, are not up to full staffing.
But they're still
paying
them.
So one interesting question is, when are they going to be following the charter? They can't get into all these other things. I mean, follow the charter. I know it costs more money, but it's in the charter. That's the law. So come on, city government. You know, we voted for those things. We voted for the charter, we people of Dearborn, the majority of us anyway, and we want that full staffing. Certain politicians may not want it. Yes, it costs money for the budget, but we said we wanted it. So put them in there. Hire them. Can't you find any firefighters or police officers that want a full-time job at the pay we're paying? I think you could.
I know you could.
I know you could.
Yeah, and I feel that would only help this particular merger with Melvindale.
Right.
But it's like Poletko said, these fire departments are lined up so strategically perfect that they do help each other, and sharing is a real good thing for both communities.
One final point here, because WH.